3, 2, 1.
Here we go. Welcome to the No Normal Show, brought to you by BPD, a marketing services firm that delivers the future to healthcare's leading brands. This show is where we leave all things status quo, traditional, old school, and boring in the dust, and we celebrate the new, the powerful, the innovative, the bold, all related to the future of healthcare marketing and communications. Hello, I'm Stephanie Rearwell, EVP of Engagement, and I'm joined by Desiree Duncan, VP of Health Equity and Inclusion, and Chris Pavlo, Chief Transformation Officer. Hello, Des. Hello, Chris.
How do?
Good morrow, Stephanie.
Good morrow, how do? We've got our Friday energy back on. I think that we were recording at different days a few weeks back, so I'm sure this will be a ride. So just a few quick notes, and then we'll get into it. First of all, just to cover our agenda. We have a headline that we'll talk about in terms of the future of influencer marketing. Is the influencer marketing bubble burst or not? Has it burst or not? Then our main topic today will be something that we're calling the Carolina effect. I'm just going to leave it there. I'm not going to spoil it. Not going to say what it is. Brand new news over here and a trend that we've named. But before we get into all of it, a few quick updates and just one really exciting thing. I think we've talked about this before, but I personally am so excited about this. On August 6th, we're going to be hosting a webinar called The Future of the Health System Chief Marketing Officer. That'll be our very own Chris Bevelo alongside Christine Cutler from Baptist Health and Andy Chang from UChicago Medicine. And we will share a link to register in the episode notes, but we'll have two chief marketing officers who cover ground of marketing and comms talking about the future with Chris. And then secondly, we have a newsletter to subscribe to called the No Normal Rewind. We always share additional information, stats, facts, links out to things that we reference here, and a few extra insights. So check us out there. So actually, I'm going to take over for a second. Before we get into it, I wanted to share with you all, Chris and Des, something that I was thinking about. I was on the plane yesterday and I was, you know, as I do on a plane before it takes off, I'm reading like the news, the headlines, Wall Street Journal, what's going on in the world. And something caught my eye and I want your take. You ready?
Let's go.
Ready.
Yeah.
Okay. So this came from earnings news, but my hot take is that Chipotle is over. It's dead. It's no more Chipotle the restaurant.
Whoa.
What?
That is a hot beef-filled taco take.
So let me tell you why I think this. I think, first of all, there was earnings news and it hit their stock as it always does. But it's not the first quarter where they've been soft. They their same store restaurant sales have been down. And I had to have a chuckle about how they talked about why. They were like, it's no big deal. We've been soft for like four quarters. And they cited everything from storms to wildfires to holidays last year to declining consumer confidence. And I don't know if you all are Chipotle fans, but it got me thinking about the experience. And we talk a lot about the experience and marketing and how no amount of marketing can really make up for the experience and how the experience is, in, from a brand standpoint, so important. So anyway, I was just thinking about that. And this is an N of one. But that's my two-cent nation take on their earnings.
You know, I used to crave Chipotle more often, but like I haven't in quite a while. And to your point, like, yeah, the going into the actual like store has been quite a disappointment kind of lately. And just the same way that I've been kind of complaining about like Walgreens, because Walgreens used to be my go-to for everything, where like, ugh, you go in, you're like, what's happening? But yeah, it just doesn't, the idea of it being over feels like a lot, but definitely a decline.
If it's a sign of other things, then yeah, I could see where it's going. I could see it going down. I haven't been in a Chipotle. I like Chipotle. I used to complain about experience when it was a big deal because the line would be out the door and my kids would want to go. And I'm just like, oh my God, it's like a 45 minute ordeal just to get some kind of sandwich. But the experience was good. Like it was friendly people. I don't remember being dirty back then. It was, you know, very clean. The menus were clean. It was fresh food. It was all the positives other than waiting, but you had to wait because it was positive. So now, I don't know. I haven't been in there for a while.
It's like the tables. Like when you go in, like no one's like really cleaning the tables. It's a fast food restaurant, but it's definitely like the fast foodization of it is maybe making it decline. It used to be this kind of middle ground area, but now it's like fallen into just like just straight up fast food territory, maybe.
Well, we'll monitor, but I just think it's the next Subway in terms of their trajectory of like they hit it really hot. There were lines out the door 5 years ago, and then I think they pulled back. Even from a brand marketing standpoint, they pulled back. It's just the way that these, you know, these leaders were talking about blaming it on everything from storms to wildfires. My lesson was never, never, never take your foot off the pedal of the experience.
Subway's still around, though.
I know, but...
Yeah. You don't go to Subway, though.
No, but like...
It's like the last resort.
It is the last resort.
There's nothing else around.
It's still a successful company. So like that kind of puts a ding in your Chipotle's over. It's fair to say Chipotle has been relegated to Subway status from hot brand status, yes, which it was. That I think is completely fair. But will it die completely? I don't know.
No, it's not going to die. I will water down my statement. But yeah, it's been relegated. Okay. Well, anyway, we'll watch that. And I hope we've stirred up some emotions in listeners and get to us on what you think about that. You can fight us on
Chipotle Nation's going to come for us.
Yeah, Chipotle Nation. Okay, so let's move into the influencer marketing bubble. So there was this really this article from Adweek that got us talking, which is around how influencers have really moved from a buzzy space to now performance marketing. Of course, influencers in the past used to be all about gaining reach and earned media and buzz and clout and brand halo. And now influencer metrics are more about ROI metrics like drives and sales, affiliate marketing, commission, and really used for optimizing, especially in the retail world, product sales. So I'll just stop this here since both of you all read this. What was your take on this?
Well, I mean, I definitely see the trend of, you know, like you need to show that ROI. But from like an influencer standpoint, I think people are maybe thinking more about just kind of their own pocket, right? Like you do all this stuff, you put on all this content just to kind of like represent a brand. But then there's this other lane of being able to just get like straight commission like directly to you. And especially if like AI is taking jobs allegedly and we have to figure out our own like economy, this feels like that opportunity for those particular folks to be this. So kind of how the platforms are integrating more of this, like TikTok Shop, they're integrating just being able to buy, sell, what have you directly into their platforms. Like there's going to be a rise in that. But when you go to it, it feels so much like the home shopping network. Like I was scrolling through that and I was like, this is awful. This just feels like just a bunch of people just like hawking wares. And like, how long is this actually going to last? Like, when is this actually going to get to bit, like, I don't know, like better kinds of content. But that was kind of my first take of looking at all this. It just looked like home shopping network gone crazy.
I like HSN.
That says a lot.
Yeah, when it's well produced, but like just people like yelling into their phone. I'm like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess this article didn't surprise me personally because I think that, you know, we talk a lot about how impressions are just the beginning point and impressions should not be the end of how you measure something. And so I think it's always important to incentivize influencers. But more importantly, I like to think of them as long-term partners. They're business partners. They're co-owners. They're freelancers, if at the very least, and they should be always on. And so how do you consider measuring based on that, which is tricky in healthcare, of course, but we can track, for example, how many people came and got a health screening because of this influencer, or, you know, even consider incorporating them into performance of service line programs, things of that nature. That's very different than, you know, that's not affiliate marketing. It's not giving them commission. We can't do that. But we absolutely can treat them as business partners.
You're going to sit on your hands the whole time. You're not going to say anything.
Say something that scares us, Chris.
That scares you? I don't have anything to scare you. I mean, okay. I just have I look askance at the whole sitch. I don't know if that's a Gen X thing or an old man thing. I mean, I'm on the internet as much as the next human. But yeah, I get the vibe that Des is giving. Like, these folks are just trying to sell me something. Like, but it's very, it, I mean, like, I can't knock the strategy. Like, it works, and millions of people follow content creators / influencers. So who am I? Who am I with my silly little opinions? That's why I'm
Have
quiet.
You never bought from an influencer ever?
I'd have You've to think about that. I mean, I might have been influenced inadvertently. I do not follow any influence. I follow idea influencers. So I would buy like content, like subscribe to a Substack. But I don't think that's the same thing. Because that's not somebody selling somebody else's stuff. That's somebody selling their own stuff. I buy stuff from people all the time, but not when they're trying to sell me something from somebody else. I'm sure there's some example. Like, I'm not trying to sound all high and mighty. I just can't think of any. My wife, on the other hand, would be a TikTok shop extraordinaire. I don't know what the word is. Every once in a while, the Amazon guy comes. It's another TikTok wonder.
Yeah, that's me. Every time I open my Instagram app and I open stories and I see anyone who's an influencer, the dollars just fly out of my wallet. It's just like they just grow wings and they just fly away, and I buy a bag, I buy whatever. So, and they more and more do talk about healthcare. Prenuvo is a great example. I want that Prenuvo MRI so bad because every celebrity I follow is out there. Chelsea Handler was the latest one. She's got a full body MRI. I desperately need it.
Just don't wear a 20-pound chain with a padlock on it.
Right.
We'll just leave that there.
Okay. Okay. Well, let's go on to our main topic then. So the Carolina effect. Dun, dun, dun. So as many folks know, we launched the Future of the CMO paper, several months ago now. And the first opportunity is called the Leadership Whisperer. And so I think we've dug into that. We can link in our show notes where we dug into the paper and the Leadership Whisperer. But the idea overall is that CMOs, chief marketing and communications officers, really have an opportunity to become a Leadership Whisperer, i.e. to have the ear of the C-suite to provide that overall market overview and opportunity. And so, Chris, I'll just toss it to you if you want to explain what the Carolina effect is and how you came upon this.
Yeah, it's interesting because this actually crosses two. It crosses the opportunity that you just shared, Stephanie, and it also crosses into the second opportunity in the paper, which is about span of control and specifically around communications. And this really, I think, first came up at the Joe Public Retreat in December. We might have even talked about it then, like when it popped in my head, it was then. And then we've talked about it more recently. Like, this is a thing because we're getting stories of this effect. So Carolina, if you're not, first of all, it helps to watch Succession, which Des, you have, Stephanie, you have not, right? So if you've seen Succession, you know who Carolina is. She is the head of comms for, what's the name of the company? They're basically a stand-in for the-
Waystar Royco.
They're a stand-in for the Murdochs, essentially. And they have the same kind of empire. It's a media empire. It's got cruises. It's got almost everything Fox has. And so Carolina is the head of communications. And there is an inner circle throughout the show. And it is the CEO, who's the old man who needs to be succeeded when he passes on. And the whole show's about which child is going to do that. Sometimes it contains one of the kids, depends who's in favor. But it always contains the president, the chief counsel. There's usually one other advisor and Carolina. And Carolina's in there as the head of comms. So she's there theoretically to help shape the narrative for whatever crisis or strategy they're debating. But because she's in that circle, because she's in that conversation, she's in that room, she's actually shaping the decisions. So she's not just there to listen and go, okay, I hear what you guys are saying. Now I'll go communicate it. She's actually influencing what they're deciding to do. So it's a two-way street there. And that is a really powerful position to be. And what's interesting is certainly there is marketing and branding at Waystar Royco, but you don't hear about anybody responsible. They're like nowhere near these conversations. And so we talked about it in December relative to this idea that comms has kind of elevated above marketing in terms of how it's valued by the C-suite at a lot of health systems. And how do CMOs get in there? And I think at the time we just like, maybe you should just show up like Carolina. Well, I think the problem with that is, and what we want to talk about is, it can be very difficult for the CMO to play that role. And we're going to get into examples here, but we know of a couple of examples where the person who seems to have more influence in health systems is somebody who is tied to executive communications, executive visibility, sometimes even reporting into the CMO. But that person has more influence on what's going on in the organization because, like Carolina, they're in the room and the CMO is not always in the room. So this is both a threat and an opportunity for CMOs. It's a threat if you have somebody else who's in the CEO's ear and has that kind of relationship, because that's not great for you. The opportunity is, how do you step into Carolina's shoes and take advantage of the Carolina effect?
The Carolina effect. It's a great name. And so Chris, I think when you brought this to us, we were like, ooh, because it feels really right and timely for, I think, where we are in the industry and marketing and in the space. And so we did a little bit of research. So I'll just read out a little bit of this and then we can kind of dig into it. So we wanted to see, is this happening? To what degree? What do the stats say? And the stats agree, really, which is that comms is starting to report to CEOs more than ever before. So this is even from over a year ago. There was some research from Axios that 56% of comms teams report to the CEO, up 22% from the year before. And in fact, those reporting to a CMO fell from 63 to 37%. At the same time, there's an Edelman study that shows that CCOs, 64%, the majority, are included about discussions. So they are the Carolinas of the world. And they're included before the decisions are made, compared to 9% that are informed after the fact. This didn't surprise me, just given the role of comms, which is, you know, you have to protect reputation. You're there when an issue hits. You're there when before a merger decision is made, all of that, right? These are the things that are going viral that are causing the CEO and the C-suite and the board the biggest headaches. And you're the fixer. You're the Olivia Pope, if you will. So that's what the stats say. But how did this feel to you all, at least anecdotally, in terms of experience?
Yeah, it felt interesting to me. It kind of makes sense when I think about like those folks that have the ear of the CEO. They do kind of fall into comms. I'm also thinking about kind of that, some of that chief of staff role. But I started thinking about it also to kind of depends on the, you know, moment that your organization is in, you know, the size, the history of it. Whereas when you're thinking about marketing, you're in growth mode and you're marketing your product. You're trying to get your name out there, especially if you're a startup, right? But once you're a bit more established, it is more about navigating that reputation where comms comes in. It's more important because you are making some of these bigger decisions that affect, have more of a ripple effect. So you need that counsel there. That isn't necessarily just about marketing. So it's like, how do you get in that room to be kind of that voice of, to share that? But yeah, it got me thinking about the types of organizations and kind of the season that they're in, I guess, in a way.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it. I like the seasonality of trends in this space. That's a great way to put it. We should figure that out as another thought leadership thing. Our friend Andy Chang talks about that a lot, how things come in and out, like experience comes in and out and comms comes in and out, and we're going to shrink our internal teams and then we're going to expand, like all these things. I think the other aspect of this, to build on what you're saying, Des, is at the end of the day, the CEO cares about the growth of the organization. She cares about the brand. She cares about all those things. But what does she care about most? Right? She's not an AI bot, at least not yet. She's a human. She cares about herself. Everybody wants to know what's in it for me. And so the person who is most able to shape the profile of the CEO in terms of proactive narratives, in terms of dealing with crisis, in terms of picking a path that's going to, of course, be good for the organization, but what's going to elevate me that person is going to be who the CEO calls. And if your only role is the organization, which is typically what a CMO does, they don't see you as that personal connection. And I think that's an element of this that is critical to understand, which is why it's important for CMOs to really pay attention to who does have that, who is responsible for executive visibility. Because even if that person reports to you, they may be building a relationship that supersedes your own with the CEO, and that is not a place you want to be.
It got me, all of this kind of got me thinking about even just kind of the roles or even the way that we perform our roles throughout our day-to-day, marketing versus comms. When I'm working with comms folks, like they are well aware of the headlines, what's going on. They know, you know, what's gone out about their organization, competitors, like they know the news factor of it, right? And as a marketer, you're thinking more about, or maybe you're reading more headlines around like some marketing trends, you know, what's going on maybe with the product, the service, a little bit with your competitors, but not looking at that news cycle the same way that a comms person, which gives more thinking about the strategy or how this action is going to affect and have this ripple effect. So in a way, I'm thinking like for marketers, like getting more on those headlines and understanding kind of what's shifting in the markets. Like not all of us are Stephanie, and we're into the Wall Street Journal looking at it from that perspective. But this is an example of like where you can actually start to be paying more attention to become more of that whisperer.
Yeah, and that's where, I mean, it's a true revenue issue. It's a reputation issue. It's, you know, if you put on your C-suite hat, you're constantly trying to figure out what are the tides saying. And I think healthcare is more volatile than it's ever been before this year. We probably say that every year, maybe since 2020. I don't know. But it's like constantly more and more volatile. And so what volatility means is that it's back and forth and up and down. And so there's really a leaned in on the short term, on the reactive. And, you know, marketing has traditionally been more long term as it should be. And we're not saying down with marketing. I think don't hear that. But to Chris's point on the seasonality of things, that seasonality perhaps is getting shorter and shorter. And I would predict that it will get shorter and shorter. The change will become faster and faster. And so how do you use real-time data to even inform what is the trend du jour and how do you handle it?
And it's interesting you say 2020 because 2020 was a big year for a couple of reasons. It was a big year because of COVID, and it was a big year because of social justice. And a lot of leaders faced a lot of really difficult messaging decisions at that time for both those reasons. We're in a similar situation now where what you say as a CEO could benefit or cost your organization millions of dollars because of the way things are happening right now out there in the world. And so more than ever, how CEOs think about what they say, who they say it to, has an impact in a way that maybe it never has, right? It'd be very difficult 4 years ago or 10 years ago or any time in the past for a CEO to say something that's moderately within the range of a messaging that's going to cost or benefit you, you know, in a material way. That is true today. If you say the wrong thing today, you really could be costing your organization something. So now more than ever, CEOs have to be thinking about, oh my gosh, and you also have to be careful of the alternative, right? So that person is going to have an elevated role again. And to Stephanie, to your point and Des earlier, this isn't like a one-time deal where like, oh, we got to figure this out and it's done. This is going to be the situation for a few years and it could pop up at any time. Who is the CEO calling? At the famous question, right? Who are they calling at 3 a.m? Who are they calling at Friday afternoon when something pops, right? It's if you're the CMO and somebody else has that relationship, even if they report to you, you want that to be you. So yeah, we're not dinging CMOs at all. This is where the opportunity comes. Find a way to be that ear.
And When you say popped, I think now things are popping because of social media, right? So yes, 2020, you know, more CEOs were tasked with needing to, you know, make statements, take a stand on items. But the reason why a lot of this is able to pop and be shared is because of social media. Before, you know, 20 years ago, we would have had to, me as a consumer, draft some kind of op-ed that goes into the newspaper. Like there wasn't this like two-way dialogue the way that there is now from that, from just like a regular person that's really kind of making things blow up more than, I don't know, they need to in times.
I mean, yes, and I'm talking about, I suppose this is still from social media. I'm talking about some higher level national situations that we read about in the news every day. This is news. It certainly sometimes comes through social media channels. But I'm talking about scrutiny on healthcare organizations from all quarters, can be the media, can be politicians, can be governments, state, federal, local. That is the situation that I was referring to. That is, we've never had that before, where somebody points the spotlight at you in the wrong way because of what you said, or how you respond could lead to who knows what. Is that fair?
Yeah. And to your point, it's not always a see Tesla example or a astronomer example, right? It's not, it could be that of something that
astronomer, a CMO, nice reference.
Astronomer. In that case, I think who the first one they called was their head of HR. Oh, but
oops.
But anyway, but it's not always that, right? It could just be something that an influencer says, something that a journalist says, some tide that shifts in policy. I think it's just that the waves of change are just moving so quickly. And I don't, have any of you seen the show, The Rehearsal?
I keep hearing it's amazing, but I have not.
Okay, you need to watch it because it's the exact opposite of what we're talking about, which I think is what we all crave. So I won't go too deep into this, but it's basically like rigorous scenario planning to make sure that nothing in life is unpredictable, to make sure that no matter what happens, that you are prepared for it. And I think that's where the chief communications officer, in a way, can step in, is number one, helping to make sure that you're prepared for any scenario. And number two, to really be reactive to it. Because what's the biggest fear that we all have as humans is change and unpredictability. And so in an unpredictable environment, you need somebody, you need a steady voice that can solve things for you.
And I'm not talking about the frivolity of social media from like, you know, like Instagram. I'm talking about like the advent of OG Twitter. You know, that became such a reputable news source. People were being quoted based off of like what they tweeted.
Yeah.
And that was the spot for news. And that's how it traveled at rapid speed that we didn't have, you know, 15, 20 years ago.
I mean, that's still true, Des. And TikTok, to me, I still get breaking news from TikTok before anywhere else. Right. And you have to be really smart about it. You have to go, boy, is that real? And then you have to go find a reputable news source to confirm it. But that and social media is where I get my news. So that could be a Substack newsletter. That could be some other newsletter that I've subscribed to. So email still is involved in that. So all that's right. It's coming from everywhere. But we're in an environment. I think the one thing that is different is we're in an environment where the wrong misstep has implications beyond anything we've seen before. Carolina.
That's right. That's right. Okay. So before we wrap up, you already mentioned, Chris, a few things to be thinking about: what this means for marketing leaders, what this means for communications leaders. Are there any more that we want to kind of leave with in terms of key takeaways here?
Well, I think you said it earlier. The way to get in the ear, if you're not there, is to be proactive. So that does speak to the first recommendation, which is be the voice of the market. Bring things to your CEO that he or she needs to know about and think about, with recommendations that he or she may not be thinking about. Build that bridge, build that trust, get it to a point where they are turning to you. They've come to rely on you, right? And then you'll start getting invited to more of the conversations. And again, the secret here is, if you're in those conversations, you're going to shape the decisions. That's the power that Carolina had, if you watch the show, right? So, but you can't just jump right in to the deep end. If you don't have that now, you're going to have to build it, but you can try to push it. You don't wait for an opportunity or crisis. Build things. on a regular basis if you have to. And then on a Saturday night, go, oh my gosh, did you see this? Be ready. We're going to have to be ready for this.
All right. So you heard it here first, the Carolina effect.
Maybe first. Nothing's new in the world. I mean, I've never heard anyone else say it, but like odds are if you Google, somebody's figured that out, but what?
You're right. We didn't Google the Carolina effect in those words. Maybe we can do that as a follow-up. And if we find something out there, we'll drop it in our show notes. And we can say, you heard it here second. You heard it here second, third. So for anyone listening, don't forget, we want to hear from you. Shoot us an email at nonormal@bpdhealthcare.com. Tell us if you are part of the Chipotle Nation and you hard disagree with our take earlier, or if you have anecdotes you want to share as part of the Carolina effect, we would love to hear it. And as always, we love your thumbs up on iTunes, Spotify. Mash that like button. And until next time, don't be satisfied with the normal. Don't be satisfied
with Chipotle. Yeah,
with Chipotle.
Don't be satisfied with dirty tables.
That's right. Push the no normal, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye. 3, 2, 1. Here we go.